Possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose MillerCom 2012 lecture series presents Justice, Self-Respect, and the Culture of Poverty, with Tommy Shelby on Friday, March 30th at 4 p.m. in the Knight Auditorium at Spurlock Museum. More information is available at the Center for Advanced Study website.
Up next, our look at the weather. A low-pressure system developing in the plains tonight will track east into the lower Great Lakes by tomorrow morning. This will spread scattered showers and thunderstorms across Iowa and Missouri beginning this afternoon and east of the Mississippi River beginning this evening. Unsettled weather can be expected into tomorrow morning across Illinois before the system pushes east into Indiana late tomorrow. High temperatures across the region today will range from the low 50s in northeastern Illinois to the low 80s in southern Missouri. Low temperatures tonight will range from the upper 30s in southern Wisconsin to the upper 50s in southern Missouri and western Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny and cooler with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high of 65, the wind from the east at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, there's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, and that is early this evening. Then showers and thunderstorms are likely after midnight. It will be warmer overnight, the low 52. The wind will be out of the southeast from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are likely tomorrow morning. Then we'll see a partly sunny sky with a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high of 68 with the wind out of the west at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low of 45. The wind tomorrow night from the northeast at 5 to 10. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 70s. The wind from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday night and Sunday, mostly clear with a low Saturday night in the low 50s and the high Sunday in the low 80s. The outlook for Sunday night, mostly clear with a low in the upper 50s. At noon central time, there was a mix of cloud and sun across Illinois and Indiana. Temperatures ranged from the upper 40s to the low 70s. At Rockford, 50 degrees. At O'Hare, 48. In Bloomington, 53. It was 62 degrees at Mattoon, 72 at Carbondale. In South Bend, 49 degrees. In Lafayette and Indianapolis, 57 degrees. And at the top of the hour, Terre Haute reported 59 degrees. Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky and 55 degrees at noon. The dew point, 37. The relative humidity, 50%. The wind out of the east at 12 miles per hour with gusts to 22. And the barometric pressure, 30.09 and falling. At 1240, 54 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Yesterday at this time, we heard from Claudia Lenhoff, a local supporter of the Federal Affordable Care Act. Now we hear from an opponent. Kim Meisch is the Illinois director for the National Federation of Independent Business, and that group was one of the plaintiffs arguing against the health care law before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. In her interview with Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows, Meisch says her group wants health care reform, but they don't consider the mandating of health insurance to be an improvement.
There's nothing in the bill that's going to contain costs. And so all we're really doing is telling people, you got to purchase it. You know, what we would like to have seen is more some legal reforms, some ways to allow businesses to pool together across state lines in order to have a larger group size, in order to bring costs down. There's really nothing in this bill that contains costs. But what the thought process was is if we force everybody to buy insurance, which means the healthy people too, they're all going to be pulling that cart. They're all going to be pulling the wagon, and so costs will go down for everybody. And we just don't believe that that's the case.
If the individual mandate is struck down by the Supreme Court, but the rest of the law remains intact, is that a victory for NFIB, or are there still too many things that you consider noxious?
While our lawsuit is based on the individual mandate, we have also made it very clear in our briefs to the various courts and now, of course, to the Supreme Court that we believe that without the individual mandate, the rest of the law just doesn't work. It's all predicated on the individual mandate. And so if the Supreme Court agrees with us and believes that the government can't compel people to buy something, then the rest of the law should be struck down as well. There are some things certainly that have already taken place that are positive for a lot of people. For instance, removing of pre-existing conditions. So no longer can an insurance company deny you health insurance because you are diabetic. And that's certainly positive. One of the other items that was already law in Illinois that was part of Obamacare was saying that adult children up to the age of 26 could stay on a parent's health insurance plan. Those things could possibly stick around. But I think the basic tenets of Obamacare would crumble if the individual mandate is found to be unconstitutional.
If your argument convinces the Supreme Court, what do you see as a plausible future attempt at improving health care coverage in the U.S.?
One of the things that we have pushed for many years, and that's this whole idea of banding together across state lines. Part of what causes health insurance in Illinois to be so expensive is because we have so many health care mandates. For instance, one of them in Illinois that is somewhat unique to Illinois is the idea of in vitro fertilization. So in Illinois, every policy that's sold says that you have to cover in vitro fertilization, whether the person buying that product wants it, needs it, or can afford it. We have about 26 of those in Illinois, and those all add cost to health insurance. Our idea is to say we're going to let small business owners form a big purchasing pool that would not be subjected to state law, but be subjected to federal law. You know, we need to let the marketplace work.
So if we're talking about businesses, say businesses just in Illinois, is that simply too small a territory for businesses to band together and self-insure? Or are you saying that some of the specific mandates in Illinois are just too much?
Well, kind of both. We do have the ability in Illinois to form a small group health plan, and some associations have tried it. So maybe the first year or two, premiums are affordable, but because the group's not as large as it could be if you were on a national scale, the minute you start getting big experiences like cancer or some other very costly experience, of course, the premiums go up. So what happens is then all the healthy people in that pool, they go down the street and buy another product, and that pool is left with a lot of sick people, and of course that's expensive, and it's called the death spiral. And so a lot of the pooling efforts that have been tried in Illinois by different associations have failed. And so that's why we believe that just from an economy of scale, that on a national level, number one, you'd obviously have a lot more lives to insure, but number two, you also wouldn't be subjected to state law.
Kim Meisch is the Illinois director for the National Federation of Independent Business and an opponent of the Federal Affordable Care Act. She spoke with Jim Meadows. The man featured in the 2004 award-winning film Hotel Rwanda will be in Bloomington, Illinois this weekend, giving the keynote address at the third annual graduation ceremony of the Multicultural Leadership Program. Illinois Public Radio's Willis Kern reports.
Dr. Paul Rusesabagina is known to most as the man portrayed by actor Don Cheadle in the award-winning film Hotel Rwanda.
There will be no rescue, no intervention force. We can only save ourselves. Many of you know influential people abroad. You must call these people. You must tell them what will happen to us. But when you say goodbye, say it as though you are reaching through the phone. Let them know that if they let go of that hand, you will die.
Rusesabagina saved the lives of about 1,200 Tutsis and Hutus by taking them in as refuge at his hotel in Kigali during the Rwandan genocide in 1994. 800,000 died during the 100 days of ethnic cleansing, an astonishing 12% of the Rwandan population. Rusesabagina says the experience left him emotionally scarred, and the only way to deal with it was to become a humanitarian.
To come out of my anger, to come out of my kind of hiding and then speak out. That is when I decided to be the voice for the voicelesses and become a humanitarian.
So it's been a cathartic experience for you.
My best therapy.
When did you realize you were going to have to sacrifice your business, your hotel, in order to help all these people?
When I noticed that the president had been killed with many of his cabinet ministers, I realized that each and everybody had to get involved. Before that, as you can see in Hotel Rwanda, I was reluctant. I was telling each and everyone that, listen, there is a government, there is a president, They are in, what are their institutions? They are working. Let us not get involved in what they are doing. Let us not disturb their job and their work, their day-to-day work. But when I noticed that, it and everybody, everything had been completely destroyed, I just had no other choice than getting involved.
What is the one thing among those 100 days that sticks with you today more than any other?
There is an event I will never forget throughout my life. I was driving on a street of Kigali when I was being escorted from my house. This was on April 9th. And when I was driving, I was stopped by soldiers who handed me over a gun. And they told me that, listen, you, traitor, you are lucky. We are not killing you today because we need you. But take this gun, kill all of your cockroaches in these cars, dehumanizing human beings, so that killing them means removing an infestation. So I understood the message, stopped. And I was, for 5 minutes, silent. I was silent. I never spoke, almost sweating. And then I opened my mouth. I believe that I was lucky enough, because those guys, also when I opened my mouth, they opened theirs. And this was the best sign ever. Because when I started talking, they answered.
You'll be speaking in Bloomington Normal to a group that deals with many facets of multiculturalism. What message is the most important for those graduates to hear?
The most important message for those youngsters is to remember, never forget, that we have been for so long standing by. People should kind of wake up. We have had a lot of wake-up calls. Today my message is to tell the world that enough is enough. Let us stand up and change the world and speak for those ones who can't speak for themselves. That is my message to young leaders who will be graduating in Bloomington.
Dr. Paul Rusesabagina, the hotel operator who helped bring an end to the 1994 Rwandan genocide, now operates his career as a humanitarian out of his home in Belgium. Rusesabagina says he's saddened by subsequent genocides in Darfur and the Congo. He says he sees many similarities between the Rwandan genocide and the current unrest in Syria and other Arab Spring nations. I'm Willis Kern, WGLT News.
How does one come home from war injured physically and psychologically and build a life anew? In Hell and Back Again, our next community cinema, two overlapping narratives are intercut, creating both a dreamlike quality and a strikingly realistic depiction of how Marines experienced this war. The free public screening is at the main Champaign Public Library, Tuesday, April 3rd, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. The film is closed captioned and the discussion translated by a sign language interpreter.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 29th of March, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet R.S. Thomas, born Cardiff, Wales, 1913. Anglican clergyman, Welsh nationalist, though he didn't learn the Welsh language until he was 30. Wrote his poetry in English, but his autobiography in Welsh. He called it Neb, meaning nobody. He was a Luddite. He and his wife lived in a little stone cottage, no refrigerator, no washing machine. He said, "A recurring ideal, I find, is that of simplicity. At times there comes the desire to write with great precision and clarity, words so simple and moving that they bring tears to the eyes." It's the birthday of Emmy Sedaris, born Endicott, New York, 1961, grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina. Author of two satirical homemaking books, I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence, and Simple Times, Crafts for Poor People. Amy Sedaris, who said in an interview about the Sedaris family, "We read everything we can about diseases and physical deformity. We were so protected in North Carolina. There's a place here in New York where you can get antique skin disorder books in color. They're really beautiful photographs." It's the birthday of Alexandra Fuller, born in Glossop, England, 1969, grew up in Zimbabwe. In 2002, published her memoir, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, the story of her life as the child of white settlers caught up in a civil war in Mozambique. By the time she was 7 years old, Fuller knew how to strip, clean, load, and fire a machine gun. She also knew never to sneak into her parents' bedroom at night in case they mistook her for an intruder. Published another memoir called Cocktail Hour, Under the Tree of Forgetfulness, in which she tells the story of her mother, born in Scotland, raised in Kenya. It's the birthday of Eugene McCarthy, poet and politician, born